Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Beautiful fall morning, man. You got to enjoy this because we're going to be back into the 80s by the end of the week, the lower 80s. Keep that in mind. But right now you're looking at temperatures about 49 degrees in the area. If you average them out, going up to only 67 today, 73 tomorrow, 77 on Wednesday. Then the 80s come Friday, a little bitty chance for showers then. But by next Monday, another cool front. Highs then only in the lower 60s. So keep that in mind. Look for that. Jeff Palermo joins us now, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network news director. Every Monday is a Rouse's Football Monday. Rouse is the official supermarket of LSU. How you doing, Jeff Palermo?
I am doing well, Tommy. How about yourself?
I'm okay. It doesn't feel like Alabama Hate Week. Just does not.
Yeah, after everything that happened last week, as tumultuous, topsy-turvy, crazy as it was last week, it's kind of strange to think that, wait, LSU still has four more games left? Mm-hmm. You know, because it almost felt like the football season ended, and now we're just kind of looking ahead to, you know, the future of LSU football, but there's still four games left and a big rivalry game coming up on Saturday, and it'll be very interesting to see what kind of impact Frank Wilson has, and Avery Atkins, who's going to be the new play caller, and how that might change, how motivated LSU will be, how inspired they'll be, the level of passion that they'll play for LSU on Saturday night. And will the play calling look a little bit different with Avery Atkins now calling plays? The one thing we heard from Frank Wilson last week, well, we heard a few things, but one of his major points was the plan to run the ball more. And I think you're going to see more of Harlan Berry, the freshman out of St. Martin's High School. I think you're going to see a lot more of him. And we'll see if they can establish any kind of a ground game against Alabama this Saturday.
The offensive line is what it is, and I know a lot of times, and maybe it'll be different when they try to rush the ball, but, you know, they were trying to pass protect for Garrett Nussmeier, and they were rushing 3-5, and they couldn't get it done.
Yeah, no, and, you know, I think for Alabama, this does throw a bit of a wrinkle into their game planning because they know that LSU's going to come with some different stuff at them. I would imagine it makes it a little bit more difficult for Alabama. They'll probably have to adjust a little bit to what LSU is doing. We'll hear from Frank Wilson today. We'll get a better idea on some of the health when it comes to the health of the Tigers. We all know that Tyree Adams is likely out for the year, but or at least for the regular season. But Carius Kern, that was a name that Frank Wilson mentioned last week as a guy that they want to give a long look to here. Looks like he'll probably continue to start at left tackle. Does Paul Mubenga, is he healthy back? Did they make a switch there and put him in there instead of Cohen Echols? Or if there's any other kind of change on that offensive line. And then I think a lot of us are interested to see if Whit Weeks is ready to play this week. You know, they've given it here a couple of weeks, this bone bruise that has developed on the ankle where he had off-season surgery after dislocating his ankle in the bowl game. They really could use a Whit Weeks. His presence has sorely been missed here in the last couple of weeks.
How does this change Garrett Nussmeier the rest of the season for him?
Well, I think Garrett is probably looking to try to, you know, finish this season strong. you know, this season has not been the year that he's been anticipating. You know, we were talking about him as a potential top 10 pick. Mm-hmm. Heck, I mean, the Saints are going to have a number one or a number two pick overall. I mean, is, would he have been in play for the Saints? But he has not played like the number one overall pick, like a number one overall pick or a number two overall pick should play. So for him, this is a chance that he can at least finish this off strong and, you know, try to put up some big numbers if that's possible. I think that's probably what's going through his mind. And then I think for a guy like Garrett Nussmeier, it isn't just all about individuals. You know, this guy waited 3 years for his opportunity to start at LSU. And they have not played up to expectations this year. And I would think for him, it's also about winning games and trying to see if this team can to run the table from here on out, finish 9-3, and they can kind of at least finish this regular season despite all of this turbulence that we've had here over the last week or so, that they bounced back from that and ended up going 9-3. I think that would be something that, you know, they certainly can hang their hat on. It's obviously not what we all anticipated when the season started, but that's a pretty good finish.
So if they do run the table, let's just say they do, does Frank Wilson have a chance at this job or not?
Well, I think if they beat Alabama on Saturday, I think the chatter probably grows a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think
he seems, I don't know anything about the man, but he seems like a hell of a nice guy. Tell me about Frank Wilson.
He is a very nice guy, and as he said last week, I mean, he's kind of the he's what Louisiana football is all about, mm-hmm. right? I mean, a New Orleans kid with the Say Dog, coached at New Orleans schools. He's you know, spent a decade of his coaching life at LSU, was a head coach at McNeese for a couple of seasons, really during a very difficult time after Hurricane Laura. He just didn't have a chance there with how badly Lake Charles was hit by Hurricane Laura. So this is a guy that's seen it all. But you really also need you know, as great as Frank is as far as a recruiter and mm-hmm. stuff, you know, I think LSU's looking for that, someone that's been an established head coach that's run a program. And, you know, their last two head coaches now, you know, Ed Orgeron and Brian Kelly, the way they were running the program there at the end of their times was just not what you expect out of a Power Four school, out of a national championship contender. And
explain that when we come back, the way they were running the program. All right, we'll pick it up. We come back with Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director, 720 Traffic, WWL. 725, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Every Monday is a Rouse's Football Monday. Rouse's, the official supermarket of LSU. Jeff Palermo with us, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. Alabama coming up this week. Doesn't feel like Alabama hate week, though. You talked, Jeff, before the break about the way that toward the end that Brian Kelly and both Ed Orgeron ran the program. Talk about that, if you will, please.
I just think they took too much of a CEO approach of it, and they weren't hands-on enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, that was the biggest issue with really both of them. And I think they lost connection with their team. And then with the players, and not only with the players, but the assistant coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And college football has become it is there is so much now more involved with not only obviously game planning and player development, but you throw in this whole NIL piece, and you need a guy to manage the salary cap with revenue sharing and the transfer portal. It almost, you know, when you look at it, you just be like, oh my gosh, this there's so much going on here. But in the end, you still got to be a football coach. You still got to have that connection. You got to have that buy-in from the players. You got to have, you know, one of the things that Ed Orgeron did when he first got here was, you know, everybody pull on the rope, you know, one team, one heartbeat. And that really resonated with the football program, and it carried over into the 2019 national championship team. And then that just kind of, that one team, one heartbeat just kind of faded away. It kind of it went one ear and out the other, and the head coach wasn't involved as much. And in particular with Brian Kelly, I think that was really the one of the biggest things, that he just was not – I mean, there was a great piece by Wilson Alexander in The Advocate and NOLA.com about, you know, one of the staffers saying, we just wish he was around more, or wish he was – a little more connected. And I think while college football is such a big business, and you want to think, well, I can hire all these great assistant coaches and really let them do all the dirty work, and I just kind of oversee it. Mm-hmm. You got to roll up your sleeves, and you got to be right in there with them and be a part of it. And that's where I think it takes, you know, a guy in his 40s or 50s, because it is demanding. It is 15-hour days. And when you, and let's face it, Tommy, when you get up into your 60s, you don't want to work 15-hour days. And when your bank account is as full as Brian Kelly's, maybe I'll go golfing instead of going out and meeting a recruit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are the things that you gotta find someone that's hungry and passionate and is all into the job, because it is an all-encompassing job.
It sounds like you're describing Frank Wilson.
Yes, but I still think because of what LSU's expectations are, you're looking for someone that has run a football program and has success. I mean, Verge Osberry laid out the goal very clearly on Friday, that it's the anticipation that LSU football is in the college football playoff every year. And if you're falling short of it, you're not doing the job. So that means you got to be all in. And if you're not all in, what has happened here to Brian Kelly will happen to the next head coach, too.
I'm just thinking of Vern Osberry. I'm thinking of Frank Wilson. I'm just thinking, what if we got the two guys there already?
And it's possible. It's very possible. You know, especially with Verge. I think it's possible. But, I think LSU needs to do its due diligence here. They really need to find the right hire here in particular with the head coach.
Without doubt. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. We come back. Bank on it. Financial insight you can count on with Jason Shields, Chief Operating Officer for Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Got a very interesting topic for you today. We'll have it when we return. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. It is 7:44, 16 till 8 Monday morning. That is time for Bank On It, financial insights you can count on with Jason Shields, COO of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. How you doing, Jason?
Doing good, Tommy. How are you today?
I am okay. You know, they got a kid in the neighborhood's got one of these model cars, and I see him use it where he's turning dials left and right and this and that. I don't know how it works. I honestly don't. But it seems to me, in a way, that's almost kind of like what the Fed is doing. Explain what I don't understand what they're up to. Maybe you can help us explain this, Jason.
Yeah, I'm going to run through a couple of things that the Fed did last week. So the first and the most obvious one that we all knew about was that they lowered rates by 0.25%. That was expected. That was dialed in. We kind of talked about that last week. One of the other things they talked about is one of those lesser known things that the Fed does, which is they've decided that they're going to stop shrinking their balance sheet. Right. And so in essence, what they're doing there is they're saying they're going to stop doing what they call quantitative tightening. And so that's something they've been doing for the past couple of years. And in essence, what that is it's the Fed's way of saying, look, we're going to have a slow, steady drain of cash from our balance sheet. And so during COVID, what happened was the Fed bought a bunch of bonds, right? So I'll step back for a second and where do those bonds come from? So the Treasury Department issues bonds, and they sell those to banks and various other things to fund the government, in essence, because we've run in a deficit since 2001. You have to issue bonds to make the cash, to make the wheels run. And so the Treasury will issue those bonds, and then those bonds will get purchased by banks and other places. And then one of those buyers who will buy those bonds from the open market is the Fed. And it's their way of putting cash into the system, but also making sure that the prices are where they want them to be, in essence. So during COVID, the Fed bought huge amounts of those bonds because obviously there wasn't a lot of confidence in the system. lending had dried up overnight. Mortgages weren't moving around. And so the Fed did what they needed to do, which was they became a huge purchaser of those bonds. Now, that in essence increased their balance sheet a whole lot, Tommy. And they also bought mortgage-backed securities as a method of backing the mortgage market. And so for the past couple of years, they've in essence been saying, look, we're going to bleed these things off. So as those mortgages pay off or as those bonds mature, we're just going to let them roll off our balance sheet. We're not going to buy any more of those. Now, what that in essence does is if the Fed is not one of the buyers of those bonds, that means that the money will come out of the regular banking system, right? But so banks will be people purchasing these things or private equity companies. And what that does is in essence dilutes the cash supply, the liquidity of what's available out there for the banking system. And so in theory, that keeps inflation in control, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're keeping a close eye on that. So with them saying that they're going to end quantitative tightening, which is only the second time in history they've actually done what's called QT. So this is an interesting thing for us financial nerds. What that means is they've said that we feel the level of liquidity that's in the market right now is sufficient for the banking systems and commerce as a whole to operate. And that gives you a little bit of confidence, right? Because that means that instead of them not buying these bonds from the Fed, they're becoming, from the Treasury, they're becoming a buyer again. And so the more people that want to buy something, the more stability it provides to the market nests. So I guess
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contrast. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on the team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Why start shrinking the balance sheet now?
That was always going to ask you that. I'm confused.
No, it's a good question, Tommy. So at the peak, their balance sheet was about $8.9 trillion. Huge, right? And so over the past 2 years, they've bled that down about 25% to get to about $6.6 trillion where they are today. And the reason they said, okay, look, we're going to start slowing this down was they started to see that what we call money market rates, which is overnight borrowing rates and liquidity, bigger institutions were starting to hit the Federal Reserve to get some of those bank reserves, meaning that cash started becoming tight. And so what the Fed saw was, okay, we think we've bled enough money out of the system now that people are starting to hit us to start using some of that money. In essence, liquidity has reached a point where we want it to. And that's important, right? Because if banks don't have enough money to lend, they'll do one of two things. One, they'll tighten lending, which is going to raise interest rates up, or then money becomes incredibly expensive on the short term, which means that all of a sudden, you know, deposit rates could reach 5, 6, 7, 8%. Mm-hmm. And so this is in essence the Fed saying, hey, it's funny, Tommy, because, you know, Janet Yellen used the term, it's like watching paint dry if you're doing right. Mm-hmm. It's basically what it's been for the past 2.5 years. No one's noticed this. And that means that they've in essence done what they should have been doing. And so it doesn't actually mean anything horrible for everyone. What it does mean is it means that the levers that they've been pulling are working. And they mean it means that they've bled off enough liquidity that they feel that they've gotten some of it off the balance sheet and they feel comfortable with where they are with this. Now, one of the things that they're also doing is they had bought a lot of what's called mortgage-backed securities during COVID. And that was in essence to prop up the mortgage market, right? You remember during COVID, it wasn't exactly like everyone was running out buying homes.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, your problem is if you lose a lot of faith in the system, then, you know, things could get really bad really quick. You could start having hyperinflation on your rates. And so the Fed came in as a backstop and said, look, we're going to start buying these mortgage-backed securities. And in essence, when you have a buyer of something that all of a sudden says, okay, we have confidence in this, and it stabilized the mortgage market. It gave us those incredibly low rates we remember during COVID, and it allowed the system to function properly. What the Fed has in essence also said with this bleed off is we're getting out of that mortgage-backed security market. We are going to let these bleed off, and we're going to let the private market actually control what those rates are, which is good, right? At their peak, the Fed held something like 45% of the mortgage-backed securities during the 2008 housing crisis. They've gotten that down to about 33%. And you really want them to get rid of all of them, right, Tommy, and only use it as a backstop when mortgages aren't going well. Because if you're the Fed, you want something incredibly predictable. There's nothing more predictable than buying U.S. Treasury bonds. They have a fixed rate, they have a fixed duration. Mortgage-backed securities, while fairly safe, do have a level of volatility, right? Mm-hmm. Because no one keeps their house for 30 years, right? And so those will bleed off or bleed up relatively. So predictability becomes a little hard, which is why the Fed has said, look, we feel that mortgage market has stabilized. We do believe that we can start bleeding these things off. And we're going to get back into the Treasury business and as they start adjusting their balance sheet.
So what does this mean to the average person listening? If we're watching paint dry, as you said, what does that mean to us?
Yeah, it means that things are working as planned so far in what they were trying to do at quantitative tightening. Lower cost to borrow from the rate cut impacts all of us, right? That means it lowers what our car loans, our credit cards, all of those things are doing. So they're slowly but surely making the cost to borrow lower. But then also by keeping liquidity in the system, by ending this quantitative tightening, what they're doing is they're allowing enough liquidity to exist in the system for banks to continue to lend confidently as those rates go down, right? And that's in essence what you want to do. You want to continue to stimulate that economy. You want people to borrow money, and then you want banks to have the liquidity to lend that money to people confidently so that you don't sharply increase rates and basically fight everything that you've been trying to do with getting inflation in check and hopefully getting jobs in check as borrowing's increasing.
Very valuable information as always. Thank you, Jason Shields, Chief Operating Officer for Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next Monday, all right?
Thanks, Tommy.
You got it. Jason Shields, Bank On It, Financial Insights You Can Count On, 753 and a half. It's time for traffic, WWL.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.